Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 59. And I hope that our listeners out there, particularly down in Geelong, Melbourne Way, Victorian Way, are still with us. That they weren't blown away by the extreme weather on Tuesday. I think I actually saw a few people just flying through the air past my school when it was at its peak, mate. What a day Tuesday was.
It was. It's unprecedented, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think 7 metre waves down at Ocean Grove Beach, not too far from us, and 90 kilometre winds in some suburban areas. Adam, it was. The thing that interested me the most was that it had to fall on a school day, didn't it?
Yeah, because of course.
We had the extreme weather timetable, kids inside, and 90 kilometre winds means kids who go nuts.
So were your kids inside all day?
No, they were. I think they went out for recess.
Yeah, as did too.
But lunch, but we were in and out because we had school photos, so we had to go back and forth.
Were school photos inside though?
They were, yeah. They were supposed to be outside, yeah.
But,
and that was another story in itself. But look, they ended the day like they always do on windy days, but it was more extreme. And then the storm hit in the afternoon.
Unbelievable stuff. Yeah. But as anyone would know, the wind is like almost like a full moon. It really turns the kids feral. It just sends them right off the edge. And they came back from recess just bouncing off the walls. But then having to stay in and seeing the wind and everything, it was almost as if the wind was flying through my classroom as well. Yeah. They just couldn't contain themselves, just screeching. A couple of my kids made a Tiger Cubs group and we're going around as tigers on the floor making roaring noise. That's three times. Would you turn that roaring down? You know, just stop it. That sort of stuff. But they couldn't contain themselves. It was unreal.
I mean, it's kind of exciting watching them get excited, isn't it, about storms. But yeah, it was crazy. And speaking of crazy, we're coming into, by next week, we'll be getting close to halfway through Term 2, Adam, and just around the corner is national testing, and then around the other corner is report writing, and almost at the silly season time.
It's amazing to think we're almost at the end of week 4. I mean, I find that amazing in itself, that we've already gone for a whole month almost. Mm. It's just crazy. And then, like you said, next week, the big one for NAPLAN, and, we wish everyone that's doing the NAPLAN from grade 3 through to year 9 that they do really well and enjoy it, and to teachers as well, we hope it's a seamless transition and that everything goes really well. It's a big time.
Look, it certainly is. And we're still going to try and look at some of the big ideas in our topics tonight, but also we'll be touching on over the coming weeks, some of that regular stuff, because that's kind of sometimes what helps us get through when we've got all this other stuff to do. So we better get into it, Adam.
Let's go.
Well, Adam, I've been doing, like a lot of teachers, a lot of work at home this week, and I just took a moment to step out of the task I was doing during the week in the lead up to this episode and had a bit of a look on Twitter, and I must admit I've been sort of pretty cold on there for a little while.
I feel like, I don't want to jump there, you've been a little bit cold social media wise in general, haven't you? I think it's just the job, isn't it?
Yeah, it is the job, I think, and also just going through a patch. I'm just not feeling as, I'm not negative about it, just not feeling as enthused. I think it comes in waves.
Yeah, it does.
And I'm enjoying the other stuff that I'm sort of turning my mind to, but anyway, so I did take a moment to look on Twitter in the lead up to this episode, and Aaron Davis, one of our listeners, shared a link to one of Will Richardson's articles, and we have to go right back to episode 1 to the first time we mentioned Will Richardson, who, American educator, has written some great stuff on education, and we actually saw him at one of our PDs where we originally worked together, didn't we, Adam? Just a bit of background.
Yeah, yeah.
WillRichardson.com if you want to check some of his stuff out. And he wrote a really short article talking about the performance era. And he's just asked the question about what do we really mean by student achievement, those words, student achievement. Mm. It's one of the many terms, he says, that gets thrown around a lot. And he was saying, he wrote that often he thinks that students who achieve at high levels are those who do well on the test. Mm. And so,
because, can I jump in there for a second? Because I think that's really relevant in the sense that I know for us, it's pre-testing and post-testing and putting in that data. And, if a kid nails the pre and post-test, then they've achieved highly. And okay, they do display an understanding of the topic and understanding of what you're doing, the concepts and things, but there's more to it than that, isn't there?
Well, absolutely. He quotes Tony Wagner, who says, these days it's not what you know, it's what you can do with what you know. Mm. And we've been banging on about that in this podcast many times, like many other educators are. I think what Will is saying, because his question at the end, or his statement at the end of his article is, in this modern networked world, quote, what our students achieve better be more than a number. Mm. So my question is, Adam, for us on the front line, and coming into national testing and all that sort of stuff, at the primary level, do we feel like student achievement is something that is showing the process of how they're going to apply their learning? Or is there a lot of focus, and it might be perceived focus maybe, on the number at the end, or in this case for our reports, the letter at the end.
Yeah.
It's a question I think worth asking, though.
It's worth asking. That's a very long and loaded question, I might add. But look, I think it's really easy for us to look at it, and as someone like yourself who's doing that plan, it's really easy to see that what you're doing now is simply for the data and for them just to simply show what they know and what they can do with that. So if you're teaching about mathematics or you're talking about persuasive, you're really just getting out of them, we want to show you what you can do with what you know. And it's so much more than that. It's really easy to get hooked into, particularly even the reporting time, that really you're just trying to get this data done, and it's letters and it's numbers and it's all these things, and you drum into them how to do it, and then basically you're going, this is how to do it, bang, 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 bang. Now write it down on a piece of paper and show me that you know that. Thank you very much, they know it, and off you go.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of things you need to do that, but can we do more with it? Is there actually time to do more with it?
Well, I think in terms of our reporting system, we are looking, like when we're putting a child at a certain progression point, we're looking at a lot of formative assessment, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
We really are. And I think if we go back to the national testing next week, if we look at the numeracy test, there are some great problems in that test, like at the year 3 and year 5 level. There's some problems that are multi-step and could be something that you have to deal with in real life. And I think some of them are great, but I still think it's the number at the end, isn't it, that's being assessed. It's not really the steps or the process or the strategy that the kids use to solve it. Now, we are supposed to be helping them learn those strategies.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way that we value it at the end, perhaps, is where their dot sits on the...
That's right. And so those questions that I think the kids find the hardest, isn't it? They really find those difficult where there's more than one step. Instead of just doing 13 plus 5 equals 18, it's one where there's more steps and things
absolutely.
That they find really, really difficult where it's hard for them to show what they can do with it because they don't know how to get to those steps. Another thing, can I bring up with this one about as well about the student achievement? I think student learning goals plays a really good aspect in this where... I know for our school, you know, goals are a really big thing and a really important aspect of it, and it's terrific. And I'm happy to admit, you know, as the last couple of years, I haven't been a huge believer in it, and I think I've really come around in it because I think there is the opportunity for a student to do more than just showing what they know. Do they know what their goal is? Can they display it? Can they actually talk about it?
Can they
actually sit there and talk about this goal? And so I've set this goal for you. This is where we need to go and you've modelled it. What do I mean by that? What is the goal? What are you going to do with it? And how are you going to display that and actually show it in a variety of ways rather than just going, okay, this is your goal, here's your test, thanks very much. Being able to verbally talk about it and have them show that understanding is so powerful and something I think we need to do more of.
I think I agree with a lot of that. I think the part of them talking about this, like the process or the strategy that they've used to get to that understanding of the goal is absolutely valid. While we're on goals for a second, though, how often in your life, though, as a professional now and as a dad or just in a person, how often do we set goals, though, for ourselves and work through that process? Is that process of goal setting that we do in primary classrooms, is it realistic of the real world? Tough question, I know. That is
a great question. Yeah. It's actually a great question. I think... people set subconscious goals. And look, you've mentioned to me about, you know, that I'm a new father, is that I actually set goals for myself subconsciously about the sort of father and husband I want to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I set a goal for myself to try and make sure that when I come home that I'm spending a lot of time, more time with my daughter. And sometimes it doesn't happen. I must admit that there are times where I pull the laptop out and I just almost need to switch off for 15 minutes and flick through a couple of things and check this out and that sort of stuff. But I really try and play with it on the floor and do these things and set goals about who the person I want to be in life. And you and I know as part of teachers, we set goals every year, you know, with the PDP process that we want to achieve. I actually think it is an aspect of our lives, but we don't probably formalise it like we do with kids in primary school.
So with the process that we do with the kids in primary school, do you think we do that so that it'll be an automatic, almost subconscious thing they do to survive in life when they're older?
Great question. Great questions again. I think.
Yeah, I'm not expecting an answer. I'm just putting it out there.
I think it is. I think we set them goals so they have an understanding of where they go to next. So I think in life, you know, if you become a job in whatever field it is you're doing, or even football, like let's go back to something like football. If you want to go across and become an AFL football and you want to get to these processes, I think it helps kids sit back a little bit. And that's the hope, as they sit back and go, right, this is where I'm at. What do I need to improve upon as a footballer to reach the next level? Rather than just going, I've got no idea, I'm just playing it. You know, do I need to improve my ability to, you know, hit a 40-metre drop punt? Do I need to improve my ability to run both ways and improve my fitness, you know? Is that kind of where we want them to go?
Possibly, but professional sports players, they have, particularly in football codes, have those, I guess, coaches and guides around them to help set those goals, I guess. So to me, that's still a bit like school. Yeah. I just
wonder. So it may not be the right analogy, I suppose. But
no, but it's an interesting one, though, I think, you know.
But anyway, look, we've talked about this for a while, and I actually feel like we're going off on a really good tangent with this.
Interesting tangent.
It's really interesting tangent, and it may be something in the coming weeks that we could revisit. But I do want to throw out to people, I think it's a great topic, the performance era. Do we need to start getting kids to be able to show more about their knowledge? Do we need to be able to... I think the question is, why? If you can do something, why can you do it? What's the reason behind it? And where are you going to get to next? Rather than just going, we want to show you this, thank you very much, and we just put it into some data. We need to get them to be able to be talking about where they need to go to next.
And to finally, my question still is, why does it have to be a number or a letter that they are looking at to strive towards, I guess?
Yeah. Now, mate, our second topic tonight, I know for our listeners it might be a bit dry. I'm going to try and make it not as dry as I can, but we are two regular teachers, and with the Tuesday night announcement of the budget and you know, the inclusion of education, that it does affect teachers across Australia.
Now, yeah, it does. For those listeners outside the country, if there are any this week, that's the federal budget that was announced Tuesday night.
And it always makes for interesting reading because education always plays a big role in it. And I don't think... I think it always comes back to... They always bring out some good ideas, and the term I would use, they also bring out some head scratches. And one of the head scratches that I wanted to bring up straight away, we're going to talk about different aspects. One of the head scratches was that they just slipped in there the idea that the Turnbull government wants to go back to performance-based pay. Now, they've talked about how that the highest performing teachers are the ones who are going to get the increase in pay. Now, this is something that came up 3 or 4 years ago when the union kicked up a big stink and lots of teachers, teachers went on strike, about the fact that this performance pay was going to create a lot of problems within schools and divide a lot of teachers. And I think it comes back to teachers going, look, I want that pay rise and I've got all the good ideas. Well, I'm not going to share them with anyone else because I want to be the one who looks terrific. And really, again, it's very short-sighted, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, we haven't seen a model yet where any kind of system that touches on performance pay works yet, have we? And the article said that if that's the angle that the current federal government want to take, then they're going to have a battle with the unions, aren't they, for that?
Yep.
Because, I mean, it does say the Turnbull government are going to argue that teachers ought not move from one pay level to the next without demonstrating they are high-performing teachers. Now,
that's such a loaded quote, isn't it? Mm. What is a high-performing teacher? Mm. What is it?
Well, there's different varieties, isn't there?
Exactly.
I don't have the answer to that. I understand the argument with someone in a job making increments and increasing their salary automatically. This is something to do. I can see where the question gets asked, well, what do they have to show? But you would think that if principals are given enough autonomy, you should be able to know the people who are underperforming.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's difficult, but it's difficult to know should the penalty be that you don't move up in your wage. It's loaded.
It is, and the high performing teacher idea. I mean, a high performing teacher in a private school will have a different set of things to a high performing teacher in a low socioeconomic school where kids, you know, are they going to think that basically that what they're going to be expecting is, you know, high student growth? Well, a low socioeconomic school is not about that growth. They're about getting the kids there, getting them motivated. Are these the teachers who are going to miss out? And all these teachers teaching at schools that are high socioeconomic things are going to be rolling in cash because their kids just incrementally go up and their student growth hits high things. I mean, I think it's such a loaded question that there isn't a proper answer for what a high-performing teacher is.
No, yeah, that's true. Moving on, there's one of the other things mentioned in the article, and this is in one of the Murdoch newspapers. So who knows? This article was written just before the budget was announced.
Yes,
and
it
I
was.
Certainly don't mean that in... I'm not having a go at Murdoch newspapers. I'm more just saying, you know, that sometimes they didn't know all the details as yet. Anyway, it says that universities may be required to ensure... or to ensure they will be required to ensure that new teachers are taught literacy and numeracy teaching as a core skill. Now, I think it's hard to argue with that. You want teachers who are going into university from high school. Mm. You want them with strong literacy and numeracy skills. It's just an absolute no-brainer there.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Because I don't know about you, when I first started teaching, fractions came up in maths. I actually had to quietly go away and just double check how to do fractions again because it had been a long time since I'd actually used them. And
particularly working with kids that you need to extend at the higher levels. You know, you need to kind of brush up a little bit on your
and
own.
Do that sort of stuff. And that's a great segue into an article that was in the Geelong Advertiser about not only do they want that happening in universities, but with the education budget, there is a push for all Year 12 students in their last year being forced to study maths or science. So they don't get a choice. They have to do maths or science. And this article was spot on in saying that they actually think that could have a negative impact on students and actually forcing more kids to go, I don't want to do those subjects, I'm not good at them, so therefore I'm just going to drop out. And it's going to cause a lot of stress and a lot of problems with those kids.
One thing that stands out to me immediately is that if they had to, would that take them away from being able to choose another subject?
Exactly. And that's what we want them to do. And I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to get them learning these maths and science subjects to become, you know, they want them to go into different areas of careers and all these things. So they look at all these other countries and their success and they go, well, we want that too. But are they approaching it in the wrong way?
Well, possibly. Because, that, I mean, they say that's what's lacking. We need more maths and science students. We need more maths and science gurus coming out, particularly in the science area. But I just like to think if someone wanted to really get into the arts and wanted to study, you know, great literature and music and that, you know, are they going to be held back because they've still got to do a maths and science? But you would imagine they would accommodate somehow where you could do both. But
you'd hope so.
Then this writer who's written about their 18-year-old daughter in the Geelong Advertiser actually said that, you know, this could increase stress, which is already quite prevalent for a lot of Year 12.
That's right. That's what they've been talking about. They get a lot of calls to those helplines and things of kids who are really, really stressed by what they're doing, and they find it really difficult. So, mate, we might leave it there because something like the federal budget and what's involved, I think it's going to link into teachers and the new pay deal and all those things are going to happen. So I think we're going to touch on it a few times in the coming months. But if you're a teacher out there, have a good look at it. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are on the variety of things that the Liberal Party want to bring up and the reforms to education in terms of the new budget.
Well, Adam, during the week, again, in those tiny little moments that I took having a look on Twitter, I saw a tweet that just quickly came through in my feed from Celia Coffer, one of the key speakers at last year's DigiCon.
Yes.
Celia, a fantastic teacher. And she just tweeted a very simple tweet that said, and quote, "Can I run the session?" says student tech leader. "Of course." And so it proceeded. 11-year-old teaching 5-year-olds. And then she put the hashtag never underestimate. And clearly, Celia, I'm assuming, and if she listens, you know, or anyone who knows Celia might be able to clarify, I'm assuming she's in some kind of tech-oriented lesson where she's got, you know, little pods of students teaching other students, being mentors, being tech experts, and all for that. I just think that's fantastic. And it just got me thinking, I'm going through a bit of a patch at work at the moment where I feel like I'm teaching, personally, I'm just teaching a lot of process. And I feel that maybe I'm not doing a lot of what Celia is talking about. Now, I think it lends itself to tech kind of stuff really well, that the kind of mentorship.
It does.
There is nothing better, though. I just think if you're doing something like, you know, maybe how to use an app, you know, if you've got 3 or 4 experts who have got it straight away, you know, send them around. You know, I think, and this is where that waylays the fear of teachers who think, oh, I can't use that. I don't know. I don't know how to use that app. You know, that's where the kids come through. The kids know what to do.
Absolutely. Could I actually want to, before we talk about that, I actually want to challenge you a little bit and say that I feel like this year for you particularly with your teaching, that the shift back to grade 3 has really challenged you and in a really good way, and in the sense that I think a lot of these things are coming up where the change has gone back, you've still got an app plan where these opportunities that you've so enjoyed aren't as prevalent, I guess, and I feel like, you know, these opportunities here, I think, is so positive in that I think you're really sitting back and going, look, I am going through a bit of a, not a low point, but a challenging point. But I think it's something that I think you're going to come out on the other side and have some terrific ideas for middle units that you can take with you and use down the track. Would that be fair?
Yeah, somewhat, I think. Don't get me wrong, I've used Celia's strategy a few times. Like, we've introduced Edmodo, which we'll talk about in a future podcast about how that's going. And some kids, like always, have just taken it on. So I've used them to show how to do some things. But I just feel like across my program over the week, there's not much of it. It's a lot of go and do this, go and do that. Now, the pressure that I'm feeling, I think, is completely perceived, because no one from above me in leadership is coming and saying, you must do it this way. You know, you don't have time for that. And I think that's something that as a teacher, and I'd love to know whether other people in schools feel this, that it is perceived, and we just need to take some autonomy back, which we've never lost, and say, well, I'm going to run that lesson differently today. You know, I've got 2 students who are great at this, so they're going to help. They're going to run mini workshops while I do this, you know, and it makes for just a much more enjoyable classroom.
Absolutely. And I think when it doesn't happen, it's because we've lost the confidence a little bit to take that thing and go, look, if I do go off in a different tangent, am I going to get not so much getting in trouble for it, but you know what I mean, don't I? Am I going to look a little bit like a pariah, a bit of a maverick that I'm not doing what's planned, or I'm not, you know, I'm not doing what's asked of me, which is not what it is at all, is it?
No, and confidence is huge. And I know we're getting, you know, a little away from our original sort of prompt here. No, but I think confidence is huge. Mm. People who work well when they're feeling confident and in control of things. Teaching is that job that really brings it. You can be up and down, and I have no shame in admitting that I'm one of those people that I feed on confidence, and I'm probably a bit hard on myself sometimes. So if I'm not feeling confident, then I feel like my teaching is suffering, or I'm not teaching well. And you know, it's such a personal job. It's such, you know, you really, you know, if you think something doesn't go well because you're dealing with young people, you feel like you can fail them so easy.
And I think coming back to it, I'm happy to admit that last night, I'm even looking at our notes on the side, and when you mentioned this tweet to me, and I kind of came back, and your first line was, nah, I think you've missed the point there, mate. And I think you're absolutely spot on, and that wasn't a criticism. It was kind of, I don't know, I think it was last night, it was late, and I completely missed where you were going with it. But something we talked about off air about getting that the kids to run some of these is, I know I spoke to you about our school started a coding club where the kids are learning to code. And what that is the kids come up at lunchtime, we kind of give them, this is the lesson, it's already set out for them, and they actually go and do it. And we give them little pockets of support. This is the first one we've run. But the hope is that, you know, three or four of these kids that stand out in terms three and terms four, they're going to come back, and hopefully they go, Mr. Lavaz, can I run this scratch session? Can I actually run this and give those kids the support? And I just need to sit to the side. I can sit to the side and kind of keep an eye and do something else and let these kids run it and take that power and take that confidence and do those things. And it's outside of my teaching where we're watching these kids blossom as leaders and blossom in confidence. It's a really good opportunity.
Yeah, there is not much more. There's not much more out there more powerful in the classroom than kids teaching kids.
Yeah, there
that
is
the truth. If you've seen it in action and the engagement of the kids, you'll know.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So look, it was a wonderful tweet from Celia, and Celia, I'm happy to apologise that I probably read it wrong at about 10 p.m. last night when I had a bit of a look. But it's a really good one, mate. And I want to go back and just quickly touch on that when I brought up before about that challenge. It certainly wasn't that I think you're struggling with your teaching, but I just think that the move back after years of having, you know, grade sixes and fives, grade five, sixes, that, and I know too, that are just so good at taking these things and running with it, going back does challenge you, and you want to bring these aspects into your teaching, but it's finding that opportunity with younger kids. It can be a difficult thing.
Yeah, but these kids can do it, and I'm really confident that these kids can do it year threes. So, and I think it's been proved that they can.
Yeah, good. So look, if anyone else is doing these things in their classroom and having kids run lessons, we'd love to hear from you. And Rick, as the year goes on, again, I'd love to hear how that's going with your grade threes, because I think it's a really good thing to touch on and such a powerful thing to have in your classroom. Okay, mate, the hand pass is over to you. I hope you can take it. Anecdote time.
Well, Adam, it is anecdote time. And look, my anecdote comes from today. Schools all around the country are doing some sort of preparation to get, particularly the year three kids who haven't done national testing before, ready for next week. And everyone does it in different ways. And I don't intend to go into that. But we've been a bit heavy this week in just familiarising and even just with the process of how it works, you know, in terms of the kids, just little things like, you know, that the kids are, after the test is finished, the kids are not allowed to read a book, they can't get their device, they've just got to sit there.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. So I was sitting, anyway, this is a little moment today, Adam, and this is where the anecdote comes from. I was sitting with the kids, had them on the floor, and we were going through the processes that you could use to solve some of the problems in the numeracy test.
Yep.
I had a few problems up there, and the kids had to go back at their tables, and they were back down, and I was reading through each question, and then we'd go, right, you know, what are the key words, what's the maths in this question, and so on.
Yeah.
And it was, I was just hitting a wall at it, my brain was getting full, and I just thought, oh god. Well, I did think for a second, kill me, but then I got over it.
Yeah.
And so I started reading this problem, and the first line in the problem was, Mary has four packets of buttons, and there's 10 packets in each button.
Yeah.
And I just paused after the word has, because I was just having that moment, and I was like, kill me. So I went, Mary has, and the kids are so well behaved, they're just sitting there, and this little kid in front of me, I won't name him obviously for privacy reasons, but he's a ripper, and he just said real quietly, almost like he was finishing it for me, he just went, has a little lamb. Mary has a little lamb.
Yeah.
And I just I forgot where I was, I just laughed.
Yeah.
And then I went, because not all the kids heard it.
No.
And then I kept going to read the problem again. I just kept laughing. I just kept laughing. And then the kids, what are you laughing for? The kids kept saying. And I was getting the giggles. And I eventually told them that the boy in front of me had said, Mary Had a Little Lamb. And I just lost it because I just had a moment. It was a lovely moment where a lot of pressure was off my shoulders. And I just thought, this is just hilarious what we're doing here. And the kids, once the kids knew what he'd said, they just kept laughing. Of course, this kid was so rapt that he'd made me laugh. Because the looks on their faces were like, I don't think I've seen him laugh like this for a while. And that worried me. But at the same time, I felt really good about it. But of course, as they always do, Adam, this little fellow was so rapt that he'd done that later on, he put his hand up and gave an answer for something else and then said,
right.
I was like, take it too far. Did he just ruin it? I didn't say that. But
kicked him out lunchtime.
Have you had moments in your teaching where you've just lost it, Adam?
I have. And actually, I've got a really good story for this one. And it was actually a recent one. And I was doing word study on the floor with one of my groups. And that's just going through words and things like that. And what I tend to do with this group is we look at the word and the sound and that sort of stuff. And then I actually ask them, what do you think the word actually means? Like, I want them to, you know, expand their vocab as well. So we got to the word and we're looking at short vowels. And it was the O vowel. And the word was log, right? So the word was log. And we kind of looked, looking at the O sound and blah, blah, blah. So now, wow, what does the word log mean? And I had this kid put the hand up enthusiastically in front of me. I said, yeah, so what do you think? And they went, and they had the motion as well. I said, oh, is that where you like log a toilet? Where you've logged a toilet like that? And I went, log a toilet? No, that's clog. That's where you clog a toilet. I couldn't stop laughing. They went, because they were so enthusiastic. They thought they had the right answer.
But they weren't trying to be funny.
No, they weren't. Not at all. They said it with a straight face. Is that where you log a toilet?
I don't know. Like Adam's, for those people, because this is not a TV show, Adam's making with both hands, almost like what you do with a plunger.
Yeah, the plunger. It was the plunging motion of, is that where you log a toilet? You're logging a toilet. Clogging a toilet. I'll tell you what, and I lost it. And the kids going, what are you laughing for? I said, oh, don't worry about it. And I looked at this kid and said, that's a fantastic thing. That is a ripper. Thank you. But it actually means I log and explained it. They were good about it. But
geez. Look, that worried me for a second that they're actually going to use another meaning of log, which we just won't go into.
I have told that story before, and people I told it to at school said the same thing. I thought that was going in a different tangent. So
in terms of the log.
Mate, that's a great anecdote. And I think we need to throw it out to others about a time where a student has inadvertently made you laugh at a time where you didn't expect them to, I guess, isn't it?
And yeah, absolutely. And you've got the giggles and you've found it really hard to get back on track because they are great moments.
That's right. So, mate, that brings an end to episode 59. And we just want to say at the end of the episode that we're actually having a week off next week. We obviously are beginning to get towards reports, in the middle of reports, and we thought it was a good opportunity just to take a week off and reset the batteries. And we do want to say as well, we will be back in week 6 with an extra special episode due to some, I suppose, feedback from our listeners over time. We're actually going to do week 6 is going to be an episode entirely devoted to anecdotes, isn't it, mate?
It is, Adam. It's a great idea. And as you said, one or two people have suggested that. People have given us some great feedback saying that they enjoy the anecdote segment. So, we're going to do an anecdote episode. And we'll probably put out a bulletin next week to remind people about the fact that we're having a week off. But, Adam, one of the ideas for the anecdote episode we'd like to put out to our listeners, if you've got an anecdote that's something that's happened to you in the classroom or something you've observed, if you're a keen listener of Two Regular Teachers, you know the kind of stuff we talk about in anecdotes. We'd love you to send us an anecdote. Now, there's two ways you can send us the anecdote. One, obviously, is to shoot us a tweet or put a comment on the blog or on the Facebook page or send us an email. Some of you have our email contact with the anecdote. But we'd also love, if you've got the courage, I guess, to send us an audio anecdote. If you could maybe send us your anecdote as an audio, we'll put your audio in the episode and then riff about it afterwards. Yeah. So you can certainly send it to us via, you can send us a comment and we can get back to you via email. Just send us an MP3, short recording of you telling the anecdote and we'll put it in the episode. Yeah. So we really, really encourage you, please get on board and be a part of our anecdote episode.
Because we are only two regular teachers and so many things happen to people all over the place. So they're teachers in different schools. It's different everywhere.
Yeah.
So we've got a certain amount of anecdotes, but we reckon people out there have got lots. And we're excited. We're excited about this episode. We think it would be really enjoyable to do and lots of fun.
We certainly are. And it doesn't, like you always know, it doesn't have to be anything that's based on theory. It's just something that's just happened to you that would happen to every regular teacher.
That's right. So, mate, the week off coming up in the anecdote episode, it's time to sign off now. So, from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've been Two Regular Teachers.